Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is David Wargon. David has been on our show before, talked about some of his ET experiences, and David has come back to share once again. So without any further ado, David Wargon, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard.
Thank you, James. Thanks for having me back on.
I've been looking forward to having you back on the show, David, because you know you offer very good insight about a wide variety of issues, surface level as well as what's going on deep, dark recesses of consciousness and reality. So you have the floor, David. What are the things that you feel moved to talk about on this occasion?
Well, I'm going to be speaking about some past experiences that happened to me up to present day as well. Since I already covered the UFO basis, I'm going to go ahead and cover some, I guess, unusual phenomenon, even if it's as little as can be. Speaking to many people, they feel that, you know, maybe it was just a something that would happen to be a trick of their eye or just a sound that maybe they just put it off as something else. But I've discovered that even the little things can mean a very big thing to many people. So that's what I want to cover today. I grew up in Trenton, New Jersey. You know, it wasn't a very nice area, but as I grew up, I always had life experiences of all different kinds, paranormal mostly. As far back as I can remember is even being in the crib. I remember there was an instance where I was inside of a crib crying, and I happened to look over, and there was a dark figure standing in the corner of my room. And this dark figure, which was odd enough, it was almost like I was looking into myself. Walked over to the crib and stared down at myself and was able to lay down, you know, almost into him, almost like something was being given to myself, if that makes any sense. It's kind of like a first and second person perspective. And that happened there. And that was like one of my earliest memories. I was able to describe the whole room and everything, and my parents were very shocked about that.
This entity, this dark shadow figure, what kind of energy or what did you sense from its being, its nature, if you have memories of that?
What I basically remember is nothing negative, honestly. It was more like something was given, like a form of consciousness, or possibly, you know, I'm a bit of a believer that a soul is given to a young one, you know, at a certain point. You know, not, I don't believe so much in the womb, but more when they're born, like they're given the gifts of, you know, maybe like a soul or intellect or possibly even a cosmic gift, you know, and I think that's what happened during that one. And the weird part is almost like, okay, you know, here you are again, let's go ahead and we're going to be put into this vessel here and start over.
What was the next seminal event or events in your life? How old were you when that happened?
As far as I remember, maybe 6 months old.
Wow.
And, you know, and that was only one of the vague memories I had, you know, and they say you're not supposed to really have memories of that far. But I've spoken to a few people who do remember having some form of memory at that age, you know, and being that young. It's just, I think, you know, throughout the life, you just happen to put some behind you and forget about it. But I do believe that what I witnessed was actually happening.
Well, just to interject for a second, I remember Damien, what was his last name? He had come out with a series of books about near-death experiences some years ago. And he talked about when people go through their life review, it's, you know, if you're laying in a crib and then you're going through the life review, you will remember everything. Yeah, you will remember, you know, the leaves rustling in the wind outside the window. You will remember the house creaking. Even as a little baby, it's all stored, whether it's the subconscious or some kind of information field. It's all there. We just have to, you know, tap into it.
Yes, and I do believe it. I do believe that, you know, and I've personally have a pretty close to a photographic memory. You know, I remember past events pretty accurately, you know, and the only thing it takes to trigger is maybe a smell or a certain song or something like that, and then the entire event could come back almost instantaneously. And even things that you may have forgotten or just haven't thought about in maybe in 20, 30 years.
Yeah, it's interesting how you know memories work and how they're so attached to feelings and scents and odors. Take us along, you know, the journey. What happened next that was, you know, really formative in your upbringing?
Well, you know, everyone has an imaginary friend growing up, or at least pretty much everyone does. And then when I was younger, I had claimed an imaginary friend when I was about 2 or maybe 3 years old, and with a very unusual name of Gobby, you know, and not many people have heard that name. Well, one time it was snowing real bad in New Jersey, and my parents took me outside and play in the snow, and they met with a neighbor, and the neighbor happened to hear me mention the name Gobby, and they said that how long did he have that imaginary friend, they asked my parents, and my parents said, oh, maybe just about a week or two, and they looked over at my parents and said, that's really odd, because we just lost a very close friend of ours who happened to be a barber named Gobby about 2 or 3 weeks ago due to a heart attack. And, you know, I always had that form of spiritual connection. You know, things would, even to this day, would follow me around or come and stay with me, and that's something that happened to me that was pretty, you know, made my parents' head turn as far as what they told me. But I used to remember I would have a whole series of imaginary friends, you know, up to about 20 of them, with all different names, ethnic backgrounds, everything. And sometimes I would even be in my living room playing with my Legos or something, just off of my own little world. And I would visually see people walking through the walls or the doors in spacesuits.
Whoa.
And I would question that. I would say, you know, why are you in a spacesuit? And they would reply back, because we can't breathe your air. And that's all they would say. And they would just walk right through the house. And, you know, I'd put it off like, yeah, whatever, you know, and just, it was a common occurrence. And to me, it didn't matter, but my parents kind of got used to me talking to myself with these kind of entities that would always show up, including animals as well, too.
Yeah, tell us about some of the animal experiences.
Well, we had I had a couple dogs that would show up in the house. My wife and I would actually have what we call the invisible cat would show up. My wife is kind of a half and half believer in the paranormal, but she would always say that we would be laying in bed together and we'd feel footsteps walking on the bed, and it was two sets. You can feel it, and this two steps of would come right up between us and lay down. You would actually feel the covers just indenting right there. And we had cats at the time, but we'd go and feel, both of us go feel an empty spot right there, and there'd be nothing there. So, and this happens, you know, pretty much wherever we go, it seems like there's always an invisible cat following us around that just lays around. I call it our little protector. So I said, it never seemed to really ever cause any issues. So I don't mind it being there.
Have you ever had any dreams of cats coming to you and, you know,
not so much cats, wolves I've had a lot of.
Oh, okay.
You know, one of my spirit animals is a gray wolf, and I usually have dreams whenever they're intense, especially through some of the Anunnaki experiences. I would have some of a form of a gray wolf standing on my left side on me all the times, and it was always my protector. And one time it turned into a red timber wolf, but it was very fascinating. I have the certain wolves there with me. Or even some sort of a lion every once in a while. You know, I have some pretty good, strong protective animals with me.
Well, that's good. It's very totemic, shamanistic. You know, there's a Native American sensibility to that too. And this house was that still in Trenton, New Jersey?
It's been through the animals' visions of the wolf. It's been mostly in Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Through the cat was usually in Georgia, all ever since, you know, my wife and I move around a lot, but we was, mostly from Atlanta all the way to, I've even felt them here now that I'm living in Oklahoma, and even felt them there too. So I can definitely tell it's something that's definitely connected to us very strongly. And, I like it. Like I said, the other cats never come around when it's around, you know, so I don't know if it's something they see or sense and they just stay away or whatnot, but you know, I do see them, acting up every once in a while when I feel them around and they start staring at stuff or running from it. You can kind of tell.
Now, we've heard a lot of stories about Georgia over the years being a mystical, you know, almost supernatural place. The Native Americans, the Cherokee, have their own stories. What can you tell us about the times you've been in Georgia, the kind of experiences you had?
Well, the closer to Atlanta, I've had the most. I'm really a firm believer in the ley line theory, you know, that there's energy lines going across the earth, but much like acupuncture and people. We lived in Sandy Springs once, and it was our first apartment. And that one there, we always had a sense of fear while we lived there. One time, that's when I first became awakened. I went through the whole very unusual process. As I was talking to many awakened individuals, and I seem to be the only one that's gone through this kind of intensity. You know, when I first became awakened, it was almost like someone was taking my crown chakra and ripping it open with crowbars. You know, I know that sounds weird, but that's the only way I can truly describe it. It was almost like someone was prying open my head, and I could feel for 2 weeks, it was this intense, it wasn't a headache, but it was just a intense feeling of like there was work being done on it. I could see sparkles of light. I could see purple. The color purple was overwhelming sometimes. Like I had to pull over the side of the road one time driving because all I could see was purple. I couldn't even see the road. it was intense. And I could feel almost like fingers like on top of my head. And then after the 2 weeks was over, it closed up, and then it went to my third eye. And for 6 months, my third eye was the same way. It was just, you know, being worked on. And, you know, that's when I would start seeing more purple and hues of blue and sparkling lights. And it was an incredible journey. But when it hit, it was like every kind of ability kind of opened up. You know, I was given psychic readings, and I was remote viewing, and I was trying to think of what else I was doing. I was, you know, doing anything that I was trying everything out, and there's nothing I couldn't do. But what I come to find out was that, you know, there were certain things I didn't really want to do. Like I did not like giving the readings because of the people were constantly questioning me or doubting it or trying to test me. And, or a lot of people just didn't understand what a psychic reading actually was, or, you know, and then the best way I would put it, I said, well, it's like if you're going to say you're going to win the lottery, but if you never play it, how are you ever going to win it?
Yeah.
But when we moved from our first apartment, well, which I'll go back to our first apartment, I would see black shadows running across the room. We would have the feeling of just eeriness. Like my wife and I felt this dread, like someone was trying to kill us in there one time. So we went to Walmart just to get our heads clear. And we picked up this DVD of An Endless Beach, it was called. And we put it in, and it was almost like our sanctuary. It was just, we sat there together and fell asleep on the sofa just listening to the sounds of the beach and rolling, and the feeling went away. It was really strange. It was trying to bring us down. So we moved to just down the block, you know, to another place, and that's when the experiences really started to hit. I was seeing some weirdly weird things there. One morning I was brushing my teeth. I heard my name as clear as day be a call to me. And, you know, I was the only one in there. One morning I woke up and I saw the entire wall in front of me, which was a gigantic white wall in trinary. It was very fascinating. It was zeros, ones, and twos. And I never even nearly knew what binary even truly was, but this wall was almost very similar to the Matrix, and it was, you know, moving, and the ones and zeros were just moving, you know, pretty rapidly, but these twos were going very slowly. And then I thought to myself, well, what's up with the twos? And this voice in my head said, that's the aging process of the construct. It says, you know, that's why it's moving slowly. You know, the paint starts to fade, the wall starts to rot, and that kind of thing. And I thought it was very fascinating, you know, just listening. But this happened for like 15, 20 seconds. I'm staring at this wall of trinary in front of me, and it was green and white on the white background. It was really strange. I wish I could have wrote down the numbers if it meant anything, but I never. It was so many of them, there was no way I could have. And then one morning I woke up and my wife was standing in the doorway, and there was what I felt was like what's it called? The creatures that you can't see, archons. To me, it felt like an archon or a form of troll almost. It was a round, almost the size of a tennis ball, and it had this really weird kind of snout with a smile of sharp teeth and these round eyes, and it was up in the corner of the wall, right up above her head, and it was moving slowly, and you know, I screamed out, "What the hell is that?" Right above your head, and she looked over, and there was nothing there, and I'm like, I'm still staring at this thing. I'm like, it's right there, and then with an instant, it disappeared. I mean, I was able to see this weird parasite creature, and that really made me think that, you know, there is things there you can't see, and they do affect, you know, I think they attach themselves to you, and they do affect your mood or your addictions or whatever, and it was scary looking, I have to say, for as small as it was, and to think that you really can't see these things was definitely an eye-opener.
And your wife felt no energy or sensation from it?
She's not as sensitive as I am towards them. You know, she knew I was seeing something because I was being very sincere, and I was in awe and shock when I saw this thing because it was just there staring at me. And it wasn't very big. Like I said, it was the size of a tennis ball, but it was enough to be upside down on the roof, you know, right above her head. And it was bizarre, you know, just to see this thing. I've never seen it again after that, but I can definitely feel that they're probably more than we would ever anticipate.
Do you think a lot of the things that happen in Georgia are attributable to, well, you mentioned ley lines earlier, but like some of the Native Americans, they talk about other states like Kentucky being haunted, basically. And you know, we've heard stories about, you know, Georgia, and there's a lot of Sasquatch activity there. Do you think there's something about the location itself that predisposes certain types of people like yourself to being able to see more things and experience more things?
I do. I feel that because, and this is my theory, is that the closer to the city you get, the more frequency, the more energy is there. Like, you got more people, you have more, you know, buildings using electricity, more cell phone towers, more EMPs happening. And I think it's opening, you know, portals on the other side. Because when I moved to Nicholson, Georgia, which is up near the South Carolina border, it was about 100 miles from Atlanta. And it was definitely a lot more relaxed. I really had a lot less experiences. Actually, they dwindled down dramatically. The only things I have is there's a couple cemeteries nearby, and I'd have a couple of, you know, dreams of, well, it wasn't dreams, but it was like a half sleep of someone was laying down next to me, and I was trying to ward it away. But other than that, like any type of UFO sightings or any type of paranormal sightings or anything like that, I did not see out there. But that's what I kind of came up with a theory, is the closer you are to the cities, the more energy, kind of like what CERN's doing, you know, with the Hadron Collider, is just, you know, adding more and more energy, possibly causing more and more portals or doorways to open. You know, I think that is very plausible. And I don't think that the energies are all that great. You know, there is some positive to it, but from what I've seen and what I've gathered is, you know, there's a lot of ones out there that are definitely have to be cautious around.
Well, Atlanta, and even the name Atlanta, I don't know if it refers to Atlantis or what, but it has an interesting past. And, you know, I like to study the American Civil War. And, of course, there was a big battle and a series of battles and a siege of Atlanta from a, you know, portal perspective. But, you know, if you look at it from a parallel on Earth three-dimensional perspective, Atlanta became a focal point because all these roads and railroads converged on Atlanta. So naturally, it drew the federal armies down, you know, from the north, and then you had this big battle there. With your ability to see kind of into other dimensions and other realms, have you ever seen anything that might be related to the Civil War, the things that happened there? Because I know that the area was like emotionally and psychically scarred by the events of the Civil War.
Well, I feel that the satanic cults and the are very, very, very strong in Atlanta, especially where I lived in Nicholson. I have tons of photos of, you know, war memorials and the lodges and everything like that, of just, you know, like the Black Cube of Saturn and obelisks everywhere, including around the University of Georgia. But when I, what I've witnessed in Georgia, and, you know, not many people come out and really talk about any type of paranormal, you know, or UFO or anything like that in Georgia. They usually just are so silent about it, you know, but the amount of attitude and aggression in people out there is just horrible. Like when I just recently moved out to Oklahoma, and everyone's actually very pleasant out here, very, very nice. And I realized just how angry and aggressive I, you know, I was, because you become, you know, your surroundings. And it's amazing. It's like, I told my wife, I said, we're going to have to learn to be nice, you know, because we didn't realize just how aggressive it is out there. And, you know, between the drivers and the attitudes, I mean, it was almost feeling like New Jersey again, in Georgia. But, you know, here it's a lot different, it's a lot smoother. But what we have caught, and we have caught some Civil War figures on camera in outside Savannah, at one place we used to go camping. And I actually have a couple of photographs of Civil War people in uniform that are, heads are like above their bodies by about a foot or two. And it's very unusual, because for it to be a natural phenomenon, I mean, I've went back and through and took pictures of it, and I was still never able to find it again, you know. But I'll have to send those to you sometime.
Yeah, I would like to, because that was, you know, that was where Sherman's army marched to when they left Georgia. You know, they destroyed a lot of things in their path, and then they made their way to Savannah to get resupplied by the Federal Navy. So, you know, they had to have a battle to take Savannah. So, and then I think, if memory serves, there's a nuclear, you know, Department of Energy plant there where they make nuclear plutonium for you know, the nuclear weapons and the thermonuclear weapons and whatnot. So you know, they've got it all going on, you know, in the state of Georgia. And then when I hear stories about the Sasquatch, about the Bigfoot, about the little people, some of the locals and some of the Native Americans talk about little diminutive people that have been there all along. Have you heard stories along those lines about Sasquatch and about the little people?
I personally have not. There are some good researchers out there for it, but that really wasn't, you know, into my field. But I will tell you one thing about the Georgia, and it's very strange, is they don't like trees, you know. And I know that sounds really funny, but it was one of our things wherever we found a land that had, you know, a beautiful patch of trees or maybe some form of nature trail or something, they would demolish it. They would literally rip it all out and build a subdivision in it. And that's all that was going on in Georgia, was nothing but subdivisions. And it was the same thing over and over again. It was the same exact look, same exact places going into these lands, and then they were putting the same exact stores right next to them. And it was almost like it didn't matter where you lived, it was exactly the same all over the place. And they were ripping out. I mean, we lived next to a logging company in Nicholson, and it was right along the train tracks. And it sickened me just to see how many trees were being pulled and ripped out on a daily basis. You're talking about probably about 40, 50 trucks worth just going there, dropping off logs, and then going on the train and taking off every day.
Wow.
And it's disturbing. I mean, you know, the air quality was starting to go down. You could feel it. Like, we used to live in a place called Alpharetta, but it was on the away from the richier city area, and it was in this more country area, and it was a piece of heaven. It was gorgeous out there. And then after we were out there for about 5 years, and all of a sudden all this beautiful landscape, they said, oh, we're going to develop on it. They ripped it all out and put $750,000 houses out there, and that was it. It was getting too expensive to live there. They're trying to accommodate all the Hollywood stars and everything, because it's becoming a very big movie hub out in Atlanta. And they're trying to put them out there. So, you know, so we moved further north, but so is all the people that are also lower to middle income are moving up north too. So it's starting to grow up there as well too. So I was very happy to get out of there. But, you know, I really felt that, you know, if there is any type of Sasquatch movement or anything like that, it would have to be further in north in the mountains area, or, you know, more, maybe even South Georgia. But I even heard South Georgia was being built like crazy too.
Oh, that's sad, because, you know, my mental image of the countryside of Georgia is like, you know, forest and trees and, you know, woodland and stuff. So it's like the land is being denuded. It's being kind of raped.
No, it is. And, you know, it's mostly farmland when you go to Central Georgia and everything like that, like acres upon acres of farmland. You know, even where the Georgia Guidestones are, you know, I've been out in Elberton before, and it's just nothing but farmland out there, and smack dab in the middle. There you go. There's the Guidestones. I mean, I drove right past them, didn't even know it.
Now, you were in this house and this community in Georgia where, you know, you felt kind of this negative presence, and then you moved elsewhere, I guess, to try to get away from it. And then, you know, take us from there. It's like, what other things during your voyage of self-discovery and, you know, with your wife there with you, did you experience?
I was able to have a lot more of UFO interaction as well too. Like, you know, my first one, as I said in my last video, was down in Destin, Florida, while sitting on the beach. And then, you know, then they started appearing when I got back the next week from the beach. You know, they started appearing more there at the house, at the apartment we were living in. And I was starting to have out-of-body experiences, very interesting ones, going to the Orion constellation and being around Mars or even around the Earth. And then they became extremely aggressive. You know, like I was feeling things being experimented on me, extracted from me. And then from there, you know, my abilities started changing. You know, every time I try to do an out-of-body experience or try to do an astral projection, it's almost like I get shoved right back in. I can't all go but maybe a few feet out, and then I get shoved back in. It's almost that's the most disturbing one, and I don't like that because I like to explore. But that's when, after that moment, things really started changing for me. You know, and I started getting more into, you know, more of the earthly, you know, problems that we're having here, you know, trying to help expose and inform the public. But unfortunately, some people knew what was going on in Georgia, but they just refused to want to either get outside of the norm or do anything about it. And it was very much like you're a loner there. You know, I was almost like the lone wolf. No one really wanted to be too close to me. But as for the experiences, you know, they started to become more negative. I started seeing more shadowy figures, you know, starting to get more senses of just, you know, eeriness, you know, of wanting to escape or whatnot, you know. And one thing I have learned is if my emotions get very, very high, like if there's a death in the family or even just pure aggravation, I have the ability to create storms. I know that sounds going to sound far-fetched for a lot of people, but I've experienced this with about 5 times to where if my emotions get reached to the peak, a storm in a perfectly blue sky will form right up above me. And it will sometimes rain, sometimes will thunder, and then it will just go away once I calm down. And I'm really a firm believer in that. And I also even saw an episode of the X-Files a long time ago of that actually happening.
The Rain Man, yeah.
Yeah.
Rain Man episode.
Yeah, and I was very fascinated by that because I felt, okay, maybe this isn't just something I can do. Maybe it is others can do. And I really feel that, you know, if there's a traumatic thing that happens in the world somewhere, I believe that it can cause, you know, all that energy, because we are energy-based, can cause, you know, those kind of issues. And I think that's what Tesla was practicing with.
Yeah, and it's the ability, you know, we are kind of like capacitors, we're energy fields, and if we learn how to store energy and if we learn how to discharge it properly, we can do those things. I mean, Rolling Thunder, the late great intertribal medicine man, he used to go around creating electrical thunderstorms, and you know, it was part of the shamanic tradition in Mongolia, where the shamans working for the Mongols, but, you know, dish out some thunderstorms and stuff because I knew some of the other tribes on the steppe had you know, supernatural phobia about electrical thunderstorms. And, you know, when you, I've been in electrical thunderstorms, folks, in Texas, where 360 degrees all the way around, tremendous thunderclaps and lightning coming down to the ground. I mean, that's scary. We, the whole house is shaking. I mean, you might've experienced that. So when, you know that that's part of the phobia base of a particular foe, that's quite a, you know, a propaganda psyop tool to have a shaman whip out, you know, friggin' thunderstorms or hail or whatever the case may be, because that spooks the heck out of the enemy.
Well, it's true. And you know, and I really have noticed, you know, throughout, you know, being in my 20s and 30s, is that, you know, I've noticed that my emotions are more neutral. You know, I can keep them on a neutral basis. And I think that's the reason why. It's just, you know, I don't try to go over the edge. You know, if something irritates me and it finally just vents out, then, you know, it usually can cause some cloudiness or whatnot, but it has to be to the peak, you know. And it's a very interesting one. I almost wish I could control it a little bit better, but it's definitely something that I've proven to myself that it does exist. And, you know, I've actually had a couple more experiences going back to New Jersey that's kind of popped back in there. I had an out-of-body experience once, I think when I was going to say seven. I can't really remember how old I was at the time, but you remember ever having something under your bed that you were scared to death of?
Oh, yes. You know, yes.
Yeah. Well, I used to have two men who used to live under my bed, as well as there was a heavyset Italian guy and a thin Italian guy, and everyone starts laughing at that. And I'm like, yeah, but they're dressed in 1920s clothes. You know, they have the old, little cap on with the, you know, the kind of the just overthrow jacket on that's, you know, from the kind of the Depression era kind of deal. And they would scare the crap out of me when I was a kid. You know, they were very violent. One, the heavier one would curse a lot, and the thinner one would just try to calm him down, but he was still kind of aggressive, and they were there for probably a good 2 years.
Oh, you know? My.
And I would tell them not to steal my stuff all the time when I was a kid, because things would go missing in my room, and I'd tell them I'd want it back, and it would reappear in the same exact spot where I knew I looked. And so anyway, one night I was going to bed, and they decided to finally reveal themselves. They came out from under the bed and took me out of my bed, and it was my spirit self. And I was dragged, you know, I remember locking onto the wall and trying to scream for my parents, you know, help me, these guys are taking me, but nothing would come out. And they took me all the way to my backyard and left me there in my backyard. And that was my first experience. You know, I don't ever remember anything else after that, you know, whether or not, you know, anything else happened or whatnot, but I don't even remember going back, but I do remember that experience. And that was my first one. And ever since then, that they disappeared from under my bed and never came back. It was really strange, you know, of experience. Then I had one once where, you know, I actually had a few in contact with fairies, believe it or not. And I do firmly believe that they exist, or at least the fairy energy does. One time I lost my last tooth, and this is a tooth fairy one, if you want to laugh at it. My parents had a little too much to drink the night before, so they kind of went to bed, and I had a tooth. My last one was always on my windowsill, and I woke up the next morning, it was still there. So I said, okay, they must have forgot to give me my 50 cents. So I walked up in that morning, walked past my parents' bedroom. My dad was knocked out, and he was a very heavy sleeper. Normally, I don't get up to almost noon. And so I'd go into the kitchen and start talking to my mom, and all of a sudden, we heard this banging in my room, this really loud banging. And my dog started freaking out, so she ran into the bedroom, and she was a big Doberman. And she ran to the bedroom, started barking at the walls. I go in there, and I see this orb of light hitting the window, like as hard as it could. And it was almost like it either couldn't get out. And my mom's sitting there, she can't see anything. The dog's barking, I'm sitting there looking. And all of a sudden, it just goes right through the wall. It was almost like it wanted me to see it. And then there was 50 cents dropped right there on the windowsill.
Wow. Wow.
And the weird part was, everyone's like, well, maybe your mom did or your dad did. I said, my dad was still knocked out in the bed. My mom was in my sight the whole time. I said, they said, did you keep the 50 cents? I said, no, I never did. I was young at the time. I said, but it was really interesting for that. And then I had another fairy experience in my house in Alpharetta. My wife lost her engagement ring, and she couldn't find it to save her life. She looked all over for it. And I had this urge after I dropped her off at work. There was a Barnes & Noble down the street, so I had this urge to go into Barnes & Noble. And I stumbled upon this book that was Fairies 101 by Doreen Virtue. And I decided to go ahead and buy it, you know, for no reason. And went ahead and bought it and read it, and says you can ask the fairies for anything, and they'll, you know, as long as you pay them back, So I said, okay. I said, well, let's try. I said, let's go ahead and get my wife's engagement ring back. So I went ahead and did that. I asked for it and, you know, did a little ritual in the book. And, you know, she was cooking the night before, like all four burners burning, full blast cooking stuff. And I go take her to work, and I had this urge to clean the stove afterwards. And as I lift up one of the burners, there her engagement ring is right next to the burner.
Wow.
I mean, right there. I mean, this thing should have been melted. I mean, because it was on that gas stove that was all four burners going, and it didn't even have a scorch mark on it, didn't have dirt on it. It was just there, lying there perfectly. And this ring's been missing for a good 2 months. And I was like, I was amazed. I gave him a whole bunch of treats in the backyard. Grab a bowl and say, here you go. Have that. Thank you so much for it. But that was a truly interesting experience. And I was like, okay, these powers do exist, you know, and you know, as long as you respect them, yeah, I think that they'll be for your benefit.
Yeah, that's a very shamanic Native American, you know, old school mindset. Mm-hmm. When one watches like shows, like I like the show Rome, it was a TV drama for a couple of seasons. They take you from the time of the civil wars with Caesar, and then it finishes up with the start of Octavian / Augustus reign. And then it was very accurate in many ways, except of course the Romans weren't that tall. They had all these big British actors playing Romans. But what was interesting was the centrality of the gods, quote unquote, in their lives. It's like, you know, propitiating the gods, not pissing the gods off, not doing things that the gods would be unhappy with, sacrificing to the gods, right?
See, yeah.
And that's kind of this bastardized version, maybe Atlantean, reptilian, that crept down through the ages and, you know, infiltrated all these societies. But the point being is they knew that there was this unseen force behind the scenes that had a influence on human lives. And so, you know, when we have that understanding, you know, it helps us in many ways, right? You know, where on the one hand, we don't get obsessed by it, and we think that we have everything we do has to, you know, involve propitiating the gods or the elementals or the fairies or whatever, because we still have free will. We still have to be accountable to ourselves, but at the same time, recognizing that these things exist, right? And so, you know, listening to you, David, you're one of those people that you've always kind of had one foot in this world and one foot in whatever other dimension happened to me nearby. And in my own voyage of discovery, when I went through similar things, and not quite like that, but you know, gradually over time, it just brick by brick, it takes down these paradigm walls where you know, you start off as a golden child, and then the school programming, the dogmas, the religion, it all kicks in, and then brick by brick, as time goes on, you have more and more of these inexplicable experiences. After a while, those dogmas, none of that applies anymore. The bogus science that's taught in the schools, it doesn't apply anymore, because you know that you've gone through stuff that's, you know, by normal scientific standards are unexplainable.
Yeah, and I was actually born and raised Catholic, you know, both my parents and my grandparents. My grandparents practiced more. My parents just sent me through it. But, you know, I was actually removed from the Catholic school by the sixth grade because I questioned it so much they finally just kicked me out. You know, I was very much like, I forgot his name, Chariots of the Gods.
Von Daniken, yeah.
Yeah. And many other ones that were just, you know, questioned the Catholic faith and the rituals and the Bible and all that stuff. And they don't like people asking questions, you know. And according to my mother, which I vaguely remember, but, you know, I was in second grade and we were about to receive our first communion. And I caused a riot because I said to them, I said, well, we had to take a paper test in order to get our first communion. I said, well, if we're all willing to go ahead and give our, if receive the bread of Christ or whatever, I said, then why do we have to take a test to prove that? And everyone agreed with me and they put their pencils down and no one took the test. And I said, you know, that sounds like me. So yeah, I was under the flag of the Catholic Church when I was younger. And then when I had my first nun teacher at fourth grade, she hated my guts. I was singled out and tormented for the entire school year to where she even physically harmed me. You know, she actually grabbed my arm and then took her nails and ripped my skin off my arm. Like,
oh, jeez.
I was bleeding down my arm and everything. I mean, she even had the audacity wanted to keep me, to fail me and keep me in her class one more year to sort of have another year of torment.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. She was, and her name was Sister Faith, which was even more remarkable. But yeah, she after her stint with that, she made her like dean of the students or something like that. And I was just, you know, rewarding, you know, this demonic behavior, much like the pedophile priests that are happening right now. You know, I'm not saying all of them are bad. I think there's some very good priests out there, but these other ones that are just, you know, out there doing these things and getting rewarded or just transferred to another parish is just ridiculous.
Yeah, they just play, you know, shuffle the deck with them, and they just move them from one place to another, and then they're just protected. Now, you mentioned earlier that over time, I can't remember exactly what time period in your life, but you mentioned this ability that developed where you started to become a reader, giving people readings, kind of mediumistic in a way. And when you had these abilities before you stopped doing readings, without giving too much away, because I know a lot of it's private, how would the impressions emanate from the people you were giving the readings, and how did you perceive them? And what was your particular gift in that regard? Where did you have visions and images or clear thoughts about these people, or how did that transpire?
Well, I belong to this, when I first became awakened, I was drawn to this website, and it was, what was it called? I can't remember what it was called, but anyway, it was this man in England named Neil Shepherd, and he started up this website with very much similar to yours, but without the stories. It was more a self-guided help website.
Uh-huh.
It was, from everything, every walk of life, you know, explaining, you know, things and very small detail. He made little videos about it and everything like that. And it was very enlightening. So, but he also had a chat room on there, and he only allowed, you know, awakened individuals or people who would contribute to the group on there. And he screened it very well. And, I bumped into a few people from Ireland, and Germany, and was speaking to them, and who are very much awakened as well too. And excuse me, sorry, the sirens are going past. I'm outside on my porch. but anyway, so we would sit there and chat. And while I was going through the awakened process, I was able to go ahead and give some readings to a certain group of people, and just talking to them, they said I was about 90% correct. You know, just giving the readings, but I was better with the remote viewing. I would actually have either dreams of remote viewing of, I know this one woman in Germany, we would basically just have a sighting or a vision, and we would just go ahead and start typing randomly saying, I don't know who this is connected to, but this is the vision I had. And this one woman in Germany says, yeah, that's exactly where I jog. I confirmed a train that ran through her jogging area, the color of it, the heavily wooded area, and then my friend in Ireland, I described everything in her house, even what she was cooking for dinner. You know, just I was so in tune that I could actually, you know, even smell the food that was being cooked, and and everything. It was quite amazing, actually. You know, just she said it was about 97% accurate, and, you know, at the time, and I thought it was really neat. And then we did this psychic 101 class at my local metaphysical shop that I really trusted, and they're real nice people. And it was called the Inner Space, and that was in Atlanta. And they actually, the only thing I didn't do too well, almost believe it or not, was the remote viewing. I did everything else right. I did the psychicness of the, you know, person standing behind me, what they were drawing on their pad or what cards they were holding. I was very good at that. But I guess because I wasn't in the right zone, I wasn't even very good at the remote viewing part. But it was those kind of abilities there, you know, and just it kind of shifted. But it was the psychic reading was the one I liked doing, but it was the doubting myself, because I have some confidence issues with certain things until I've done it for a long time, you know, that you know, when people kept questioning it or kept trying to throw a curveball in there, I was like, I don't like doing this, you know. The Inner Space kept trying to get me to try the new psychic thing, and I wasn't comfortable with this. I said, this really isn't for me.
Yeah, you got to do something that resonates within, and if you're getting resistance to it, it's something, well, you're always going to have the ability, and you can just use it on as needed basis, right? Have there been times when you have utilized your abilities to, you know, protect yourself or to gain some kind of advantage or to help yourself or in your family in some way?
I have not so much of the, well, if it has been for the help, I really don't know. I mean, it could have been possibly. I am a firm believer in karma, and I'm a firm believer in, you know, take the good with the bad. Look for the bright side of a bad situation.
Yes.
Because there is a learning experience, and a lot of my friends will tell you that, you know, if something bad happens, first thing I'll say is, well, look at the bright side. Maybe for this reason it didn't happen or whatnot. But, you know, I did have some abilities when I was, you know, growing up. You know, a lot of people, deja vu is always questionable. What is deja vu? You know, is it a psychic premonition? Is it something we've already lived? Is it a glitch in the matrix? You know, who knows what it is? But there is one time where I was getting a lot of deja vu as a child. And I know this is really small, but, you know, it did happen. But as I got deja vu with a child, I remember I was playing gin rummy with my mom. And I remember that in this one moment of deja vu, I had this urge where I put down the wrong card and she won. And I decided to go ahead and say, okay, well, wait a minute. I remember this happening. Or I remember everything. So let me go ahead and put this card down. And I wound up winning. And it was just like I managed to change it just by managing to catch that deja vu at that exact instant.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even like driving too. You know, you just decide to take another road. But that deja vu turned more into a gut instinct than an actual deja vu, you know, after those moments of actually being able to play into it. So it's like even last night I was walking my dog around the neighborhood and I had this horrible gut instinct not to go any further. And for whatever reason, you know, and there's helicopters flying over. I guess they were looking for something or someone. But I decided to go ahead and just take a little U-turn and went right back to the house. And the urge to run away the second I went down that road, you know, or if I've overstepped my bounds at work or something like that, and I'm about to get called in the office, I'll have this urge in my stomach all day long until they say, "Oh, we need you to come to the office." And all of a sudden, it's gone. It's almost like someone's thinking negative vibes or some type of negative vibe is heading my way. And I'm like, once it goes away, it's I feel better, and it's really interesting, actually.
Have you noticed in the recent past, and I've talked to some people about this, that have the glass half full mentality that you just talked about, seeing the good side of things and learning even from adversity, right? Not in a Pollyanna, yeah, New Age, la-di-da kind of way, but, you know, just taking things bit by bit. Okay, this is the predicament I'm in. This is the situation I'm in. This is the challenge I have. This, you know, because I like to problem solve. I'm a problem solver, yeah, by nature, right? And so I look at everything as kind of a challenge to kind of fix things, you know? And so,
yes.
Have you noticed over time that your ability to create, to manifest, that dynamic, has that started to creep into your life?
Yes, and you know, and actually I help a lot of people with it as well too, because One of the biggest issue is that, you know, everyone does it at first, but it just depends if you learn from it or not, is when something negative happens, you blow up off the edge. You're just like, you know, you're like, oh my God, you know, this is the end of the world, blah, 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 blah. And the first thing I tell people is, you know, is that the more you worry, the less it's going to get fixed. And that's one thing I have, because you know, I'm not at all firm believer in the new age at all. I mean, you have to have negative, you have to have positive. It's got to be a balance. You know, that's just how it really is. If you ignore it, in which I've seen many people ignore it, they wind up exploding with it at one point in their life, or they're trying to suppress something. And actually, you know, just take a little sidetrack. That actually happened to that friend of mine that was in Ireland. You know, she was New Age, and she was all about, you know, she was an angel, and she didn't have any negativity in her life. But when I started talking to her and started, you know, people have this ability. I have this ability to open up deep wounds in people without even trying or even asking, or they find the confidence in me, and they tell me everything has happened. You know, I've had friends who said their parents tried to kill them, or people have been raped or whatever. And it's like, whoa, you're telling me this. So I just learned to accept it as I went on. And she told me that she told me about her life story and everything. And then all of a sudden, the second she told me that, everything in her life changed. Like, you know, she was in a dead end marriage. She was not in a love marriage. So she got out of the marriage. She found someone that made her happy. You know, she's opened up a bookstore for herself, and she got her life on track. And from what I gathered, and after that, every time I help a person, they just vanish. You know, I never see them again. And it's very typical. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to help this person, but I'll never see you again. Bye.
It's like Michael Landon in Highway to Heaven, you know?
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to walk down the road now. You know?
Exactly. And the funny part is, it's completely the opposite. I'm not the one that's walking down the road. They are.
Yeah. Well, I've experienced something similar, David, where, you know, people, I've heard this countless times. You know, I've told you things I've never told anyone. I've told you things that I don't even admit to myself, or I've told to my closest friends or family. It's, you know, I think some of us have this ability where they feel that they can open up to us. And you know, we respect that trust. We respect the fact that, you know, in a moment of vulnerability, they share with us, right? So there's a big responsibility that comes with that. And there's a lot of frauds and deceivers in our field that, you know, would exploit these moments of vulnerability, right? And try to manipulate that person. But, you know, we're not of that ilk. So we, you know, we do what we can to help these people. And what I'm seeing is that some people that have this manifesting ability, whether it's positive or negative, David, because it was a really interesting story you just told about the gal in Ireland, because I've seen the inverse of that, or the opposite rather, where these people that try so hard to suppress the negative, oh, I don't talk about reptilians because that's just too negative, or I don't want to hear about that, or I don't want to hear about what's going on here or there. And then down the track, you know, everything just explodes for them. You know, they come down with a really bad terminal disease, or you know, the relationship just totally unravels, and it turns out they've been in a crappy relationship all the time, and these are people that are always trying to keep everything positive, you know? So it's like they try to bottle and suppress and submerge all this negativity in their life. They mask it with a sugar coating of feel-good kind of stuff, and then because the way this divine matrix works, they can't suppress it any longer. It just has to, you know, come out into the open. And because they spent so much time and effort keeping everything submerged, when it comes undone, everything just flies apart. It comes apart at the seams, you know. And so that's a very painful process to watch people go through. Instead of doing things in a controlled fashion, okay, you know, problem solve and you know, kind of navigate your way through life and use intuition and goodwill and good fortune. And when it comes your way, I think what I'm also seeing is people that have this manifesting creative ability, despite the nature of this prison matrix, David, you know, they're still bringing good fortune into their life in different ways. I'm seeing people that are, you know, they're making the best for themselves in an environment, in a matrix, which is designed to imprison them spiritually and even physically.
Yeah, and you know, I really think that's why, if you want to go for any type of form of mental health, you know, that it's so expensive. You know, I mean, you get what you pay for, you get what the insurance pays for here, and I really feel that, you know, a lot of people are really scared that they're going to be put on instant medication the second they say, oh, I have a mental health problem, or I have a problem I need to talk about, and it goes on their record, and they can't, you know, do anything. Like, they'll be restricted from certain things. You know, there's a lot of fear about that because, you know, and I think a lot of times too is they're also afraid that, you know, they can get locked up in an instant, you know, and I believe it could be very possible. I almost question how many people are even locked up in mental institutions and stuff like that are truly, you know, have spiritual abilities or more than just, you know, what they classify them under, you know, very much like the 1910 or 1920s, where the woman reporter went into undercover, and I read the article about it, you know, where she went undercover in this mental institution, found out some people just couldn't even speak English. That's the reason why they were there.
And, yeah, yeah.
And it was just appalling, you know, and it was just amazing to, you know, that, you know, no one talks about the mental institutions anymore. You know, it's they're shoved in a corner and that's it, you know, and it's scary.
It is. That's the beauty of having people like Jerry Marcinski and Sherry Sweeney come on the show, because they talk about things from a spiritual, supernatural, if you will, aspect, but from the mental health, psychological standpoint, where they're saying, look, these people aren't schizophrenics. There really are dark entities that are putting all these intrusive thoughts to their heads and foisting all these OCD negative thought loops upon them. And you know, it, what they do, David, it's just so insidious, is, and I've seen this and you've probably seen this too, these people that are just consumed by self-doubt. They question every little thing. Oh, should I do this? No, if I do this, and this is going to happen. It's like they literally, because of the entities working through them,
they create
their own miserable existence. Mm-hmm. And the entities just laugh because it's the funniest thing for them to just use people like puppets on a string, get them to doubt themselves. And that just shows you how fearful these entities are of us and how powerful we are if they got to go through all this to make us doubt ourselves. And so we wind up creating this crappy kind of existence for ourselves instead of a life of abundance, of creativity, of dynamism, dynamic, you know, creativity. It's one of doubt, of fear, of vacillation. And I see this with a lot of people, David. It's really sad. Anyhow, we've reached the end of the first segment with our special guest, David Wargun. And, you know, we have so much more to go. So we'll see the members at the top of the next segment. And if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.